Welcome back to the Clayton Hotel in Dublin's financial district on Cardiff Lane, just off Sir John Rogerson's Quay, in a part of the city that used to be full of shipyards and, in the case of this street, gasworks or paint factories, but today is home to many multinational companies. Sinn Féin TDs and senators are gathering here today ahead of the return of the Dáil later this week. A budget in 2 weeks' time and a general election by March at the latest, and possibly much earlier. Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald is with us. You're very welcome to morning.
Thanks so much, Gavin. Good morning.
You've been talking in recent days about your very difficult year, your own health problems, your husband's, and the loss of your father this summer. How are you now?
I'm great, Gavin. Thank you for asking. Yeah, we had quite a year of it. You know, life for any family is going to present challenges. It's just, in our case, a lot happened sort of all at once. But we're great now. And I suppose the great thing, and any family who's faced, you know, health difficulties or particularly cancer will know that as hard as it is, you don't walk the journey on your own. So, like, I have a great family, I have a great circle of friends. And yes, it was very tough, I will not lie. But the good news is we're through it. We're at the far side, thank God. And I feel so grateful for that. And I suppose for me, in the work that I do and in my public role, I think it's added a sense of steel to me and resilience. But thanks for asking. And by the way, since I've spoken about this, the goodwill from people has just been immense. So it speaks to the eternal and not too often spoken about kindness of people. So thank you.
You've had 3 months now to reflect on what happened at the local elections when your party lost 60% of the vote that you got in 2020. Do you know now why over 300,000 people who voted for your party in the last general election changed their mind in June?
Well, Gavin, the electorate in June gave us a very clear message and set us a very clear challenge. The challenge to set out an alternative, to make it clear that there will be a choice, that there is a choice in Irish politics, to put it in the common parlance, to demonstrate again that they're not all not the same, that it does actually matter who you support, who you vote for. That, in fact, the big issues that have blighted, remember, people's lives since 2020, the housing crisis has deepened. We talked about change all of the time. And a lot of people across society said, well, you're talking about change, but we don't see the change. So I think there was almost a sense of some impatience with us.
I mean, I've heard that. Blamed you for no change then?
I think because we had done so well in the last election, because people were so invested in the kind of change that needs to happen, because it's essential to people's lives, that, yeah, there became a little bit of weariness saying, well, you're talking about this change, show it to us. When's it going to happen? How's it going to happen? And the housing thing is absolutely immense right across society, as you know. And then we face the challenge of a war in Ukraine, the whole immigration issue being so badly mishandled by government in a way that I think was unnecessarily divisive and lacked thought and lacked planning. So all of those elements came together and we got the message to shape up, to get cracking, to be connected and vocal. And we're back now. We've worked hard over the summer. And we are now coming back into this Dáil term with a real sense of renewed purpose and renewed determination.
But the two big government parties lost less than 10% of that vote from 2020. You lost over 60%. There were videos circulating during the election campaign of your candidates being chased away from doorsteps and housing estates and being shouted at. Many were called traitors. Mm-hmm. Why was that?
Well, I think... light was shed on all of these matters when the same individuals were seen above in Belfast cavorting with very, very vicious loyalist elements. In fact, marching down the Ormo Road and poking fun at the fact that five innocent Catholics had been gunned down in Graham's Bookmakers there. I think that spoke to the agenda and the mentality of those who are shouting abuse at anyone. And in fact, I think it has become very, very clear in many communities who, in fact, the traitors are. We have a very strong message for our community. Bear in mind, we've been activists for a very long time. We're not Johnny-come-latelys to any of this. Our commitment to making the lives, particularly of working class communities, better is unrivaled. But you're right, there was a concerted effort. Lots of it was online, a concerted effort to come at Sinn Féin. And the only thing I could conclude, Gavin, actually from the whole thing, is that those who were shouting all of this abuse fundamentally don't want change. Fundamentally, they want the status quo. Fundamentally, they don't want the things, all of the things that are better for our communities.
You said after the election that your party's policy didn't reflect the public's concerns on immigration, that you didn't have their backs. Now, in government, when people say no to housing asylum seekers in their areas, many people have done in recent months and years, what will your party do?
We've made clear what we will do. Firstly, we want the processes themselves to be more efficient. That means more investment. We have a rules-based system. That's absolutely where it must be. The rules have to be transparent and they have to be enforced. So all of that needs to happen. In communities that are very, very stretched, let me tell you what I mean by this. I mean the kinds of places where kids, young people, will go on a Friday evening and eat as much as they can on Friday because they're not sure that they're going to eat on Monday. Areas that are stretched to that extent, these facilities should not be sited there. It is not commonsensical and it is not fair to place another cohort of vulnerable people seeking international protection who need support and who need resources into areas that are literally on their knees. That's the first thing. The second thing is, in those areas where you are going in to site, and we have to find accommodation for people, as a matter of respect and common sense, there has to be an audit of the area. The state has to establish what the state of play is in terms of school places, access to GPs, yes, et cetera, et cetera.
But the criteria
and
that
there
you...
has to be a conversation with the community, not a veto. A respectful conversation where people can ask questions
and say no
and get answers. But the option here is, you see, you're reflecting a very stark picture, which I don't think tallies with the reality. Let me give you a concrete example. Thornton Hall, this, which would be a very, very large cohort of people. I have heard people from Ashburn and from other parts ask very reasonable questions, not just about their own community and the effect that it's going to have on them, but they've asked questions about people who are going to be accommodated in this place. What kind of supports will they have? How will they put their day in? What will their life look like? And all of them will tell you, and you'll have heard them yourself, Gavin, on the media, not least, saying they've got no response.
Yes.
That's not a reasonable
but the criteria,
or an intelligent approach to this.
The criteria that you've set out for where to house asylum seekers based on housing, health, schools and more, they're very high. It's arguable that there isn't a part of the country that isn't challenged.
That's not true.
In some way, on any of the grounds that you've set out, had you identified anywhere in the country that is suitable to house asylum
seekers?
Gavin,
that's not true. And you will know, for example, within our educational system, we have about 4,000 schools across the state. 1,200 of them are DESH schools. How do we know that? We know that because, or how did we establish that? Because the state has data.
Yes, but have you identified anywhere
know,
that is suitable?
They know where. The one thing that I have said are the areas of clear, marked deprivation.
Have you identified anywhere that is suitable?
Marked deprivation are not the place. The suitable places are the places that are not dealing with those levels of want and deprivation, and areas where you go and you have the conversations with the community. Listen, by the way, the state failed to follow the recommendations of the Day report to actually invest in public facilities. Therefore, a number of people have gotten very, very rich in a privatised approach to this.
Okay.
So it has been a complete and utter mess. We're committed to a public model and a model that's based on common sense also and listening to the community and minding social cohesion. We have to watch social cohesion so that those who do come and who are due protection, that we have the right atmosphere and the right facilities to actually absorb them and embrace them into our society.
The difficulty with meeting the country's basic responsibilities to people who come here looking for shelter are in large part a reflection of the squeeze on housing. Now, your party
Absolutely.
Says it will oversee another 300,000 houses over 5 years. Many will question how those targets can be delivered. And the only way the electorate can judge your governing record is by looking at what you've done in the North. Now, in 2020, your party took over the housing ministry, announced a plan to build 100,000 social and affordable homes over 15 years, over 6,500 a year on average. 700 homes have been built each year for the past 3 years. It could be as low as 400 this year because of budget cuts by your own finance minister. It doesn't inspire confidence that you can do what you'll say you'll do south of the border, does it?
Well, of course, it's apples and oranges, north and south. The executive doesn't have tax-raising powers. I mean, it is now accepted by every party around the executive table and indeed by the British government itself that the North is chronically underfunded. And the lack of delivery in that area is a simple reflection of that. Deirdre Harga, you're quite correct, produced a report that would be revolutionary in terms of delivery of housing. The executive then was down for some time. Thank God it's now back up and functioning. But here, south of the border, we have, this is a sovereign state. We have all of the tax-raising powers.
Raise taxes in the north too. And the current programme for government, issued only in the last few weeks, doesn't set out any targets for social and affordable houses.
I think the minister is on the record of setting out a target, which is not an acceptable one. I will make no bones
about that. There's none
of the
current programme for government.
But Gavin, you can only do in the north what you can do with the budget allocation that comes from London. I'm a United Irelander. I don't want our island partitioned. We would be in a far healthier state in a single 32-county entity where we can raise and vary our taxes and make the very necessary investment in public services and infrastructure, including housing. Unfortunately for now, albeit only for now, the island is partitioned, and unfortunately Tory government after Tory government has hacked away at the northern budget.
But targets haven't even been set out. On hospital waiting lists in the north, the highest in the UK at the moment, the executive which your party leads has no targets in this programme for government on reducing waiting lists. Why not?
Our commitment has been to a multi-annual funding for health. And Conor Murphy and Caoimhe Archibald, in fairness, have dedicated a large chunk of what is, let me repeat, a limited resource to health. One of our newly elected MPs, Pat Cullen, led the charge on behalf of the nursing staff in the north and indeed in Britain. We're all too well aware of the shortfalls within the system and how it's struggling. We absolutely get that. What's our commitment? Our commitment is to do our very best within the current budget and then go
you can raise
and face
money.
Up...
You can raise money through water charges,
and
for example.
And to go and to have it out with the Exchequer. Michelle and the ministerial team were in London as recently as last week with the Treasury raising all of these issues, but we can't do a loaves and fishes act. You can only act. And by the way, this isn't just a Sinn Féin concern. I suppose one of the rare moments of unity, every single party around the executive table and beyond accepts that we need to take the fight to London for more fighting, for more funding for the North. And then ultimately, We have to address the elephant in the room, which is partition.
We don't know when the next general election is going to be. Have your party worked out how many candidates you're going to stand yet?
Well, we're working our way through candidate selection. I have the number of candidates that we run is a matter of significant public commentary. As you know, I got told off in 2020 for not enough. Last election, perhaps, for too many in certain constituencies. So we're working our way through that.
Have you worked it out yet?
I have a figure in mind. It'll be somewhere hitting 70. Obviously, we are analysing the picture, not just statewide, but constituency by constituency.
Mary Lou MacDonald, leader of Sinn Féin, thank you very much for speaking.
Thank you so much.